As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Standing Room Only podcast. Yes, I'm your host, Ben Standing. I cover the Washington Commanders for The Athletic. It is Sunday afternoon here in the DMV, and the 2024 NFL draft is officially over. The Commanders finished with 9 picks, which we knew they had going in. They made a trade in between, but still ended up with 9. Lots to discuss. I'm going to do that in a moment with our pal Nikki Jabala from the Washington Post. We went through some of the main takeaways, most surprising pick, remaining needs, post-draft outlook, and so on. I don't even know we talked a ton about Jaden Daniels, but if you missed it on night one of the draft, I did do a podcast with David Harrison from the Locked On Commanders podcast, and he does some work for Sports Illustrated. So you can check that out. Not to mention, on the website, tons of stories over the last few days about the draft. So you can check that out as well. Subscribe to The Athletic. By the way, if you catch it, this podcast today, it is still $1 a month for, I think it's $1 a month for the next 12 months. So just click on one of my articles and you can get that deal done. What else can I tell you? Well, I'm going to talk more about the draft myself here in a moment. It's been the draft is a ton of fun. I think we all know clearly I'm into it based on the amount of time I spend on this and the mock drafts, and for what it's worth, I did okay in the mock draft this year. Didn't win, finished top quarter of the 170 odd people that were in there. Could have done better, did okay. We'll leave it at that. Broadly, I just want to say, as I look at the Commanders, and I will have a story out tomorrow kind of along these themes as well, but if you've been like me, looking at it from a 2025 prism, which to all indications is what they are aiming for, meaning they built the roster up to be credible this year. And if things go well with Jaden Daniels and Austin Ekeler and Jeremy Chinn, or maybe some of these other rookies, or immediate contributors, then hey, who knows? The NFL, we see all the time, worst to first, absolutely plausible. In a general sense, they are most likely to be still a work in progress by the end of next year. And that's okay. That's okay. I mean, I get it for the people who were like desperate to win again. And look, even as a reporter, it's not fun covering losing teams over and over again. But it is better when you're covering functional teams rather than chaos and dysfunction, which was mostly what we had for the last 2 decades. To this point, I'm not much into the draft grades because who knows? Like, we can talk about Jaden Daniels being the best, but that's what people were saying about, Ryan Leaf and Zach Wilson and Justin Fields and Robert RG3 to some extent. So we will see over time. There's lots of things to like, though, about the kid. It's pretty clear they are in love. They said he was their number one player on their board overall, presumably including Caleb Williams was the inference there. As we go back, that whole conversation, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, JJ McCarthy, My basic point was, while I don't know for sure what they think, the conversation I'm having with the rest of the league is Jaden Daniels could rival Caleb Williams, if not be better than Caleb Williams for some people. But the downside was not there relative to the way people talked about Drake May, who, by the way, went third, right? Again, this whole conversation, it wasn't like people say one guy was great and the other guy's a disaster. He went third. One went second. Over time, we'll see. But in terms of the process, in terms of what it is that this organization has done over the last several months, I think has been fairly impressive to this point. We talk about biases and do reporters have bias and whatever. I think that certainly some might, but in general, every human being has a bias. We see the world through our own experiences and through how, what matters to us. And even if you're asking people questions and not editorializing within a story, you're asking specific questions based on your interest, your needs, or your concerns. So all I can say is that for me personally, as I've watched what they've done, going back to free agency, it's kind of been straight up with how I viewed what they wanted to do. Go back and read any of my free agent articles or their roster building articles before the draft. I mean, without going through the specific positions, each one, the broader point, and sometimes I think, do I need to keep repeating things because new people are coming in to listen, or just keep reminding people what I'm saying, or do people find it tedious? I don't know, but that's why I think we all do these things, right? You keep driving home the point that if you were viewing this team as a, like, what moves does Adam Peters need to make to get them back into the playoffs, is the wrong way to look at this, because you're coming off a 4-win season with massive holes everywhere. The one thing about the draft last night that I saw, or over this last few days, was so fascinating is we can quibble about the order of the picks. Maybe it showed some lack of urgency in some picks, but when you have 9 picks and you use them all in different positions and each one addresses a need in some capacity, that says about how many needs you have. I asked Adam Peters a question about that. It seemed like he was going to the best player available versus needs, but I somewhere in there said, no offense, but basically you guys do have a lot of needs. He did. They do. They inherited a messy roster. And then on top of it, they didn't bring back a bunch of guys. They only brought back a handful of players from that, reserve, spot starter bin. And they brought in a whole bunch of other guys from the outside, other than Tyler Biadasz, Dorrance Armstrong. Who am I forgetting here? Oh, Frankie Luvu. I know that Nick Allegretti signed a 3-year deal, but to me, that one's more like Wes Schweitzer. He may start, he may not ultimately. And then yes, technically Austin Eckhart, a 2-year deal, but for minimal money, it's basically a 1-year deal. Everybody else is on a 1-year deal for the logical reason of they just need to put together a lineup. They need to be credible. They need to give all their young players, especially Jaden Daniels, the opportunity to compete without having too many hindrances. But also gives everybody a chance to see what they have, what they're doing as an organization, as a coaching staff, as a front office. And then next year, especially if Jaden Daniels gets aggressive, looks good, then they can look to have an offseason like the Houston Texans did, where they have a ton of cap space and they can use it to go out and sign a Danielle Hunter or the offensive tackle equivalent, or bring in another receiver or offensive weapon or what have you. That is where they are at. So, and by the way, if you really want to help Jaden Daniels, for the people who keep talking about that, going the slower route in year one does that, because it takes some of the pressure off of him rather than saying, okay, kid, we've given you all this stuff, now go win and get in the playoffs. It's pretty rare. CJ Stroud is the outlier, not the norm, right? So I think across the board, what they have done has been pretty reasonable and logical. And to be fair, I'm talking about from Josh Harris on down. Now, sir, the coaching situation got a little wacky because of, what happened with Ben Johnson and Dan Quinn. And I don't need to repeat myself as to what I think of that scenario and the fact that their lack of communication with the world, I think, fed into some of that, as we saw here, even with the quarterback stuff in the end. But everything has been fairly reasonable. And, I stay with that to the draft. I've been surprised. I'm not going to lie. I've been surprised that the more negative reaction that some people have had about their draft. Again, if you want to go out there and tell me that you think this tackle is better than that tackle, or Brandon Coleman, the guy they took in the third round, is more of a guard, which, to be clear, some people say, I'm not arguing. But if you, who as a fan, are saying that, are you just repeating what you heard elsewhere? And even if you tell me you watch the tape, I don't know what your credentials are. So I'm okay, seemingly, with everything they did. Again, in terms of the logic, I am much more of a process guy than I am a results guy. Results can be, you know, 100 things can happen. RG3 can get hurt. The ownership can screw things up. It's like the, you know, whatever. Hopefully you guys know what I'm saying here. I'm mumbling over my words as I'm coming off of 8 hours, like 9 hours sleep over the last 3 days. So apologies for that. But my point is just that, in general, for the way I look at the world, the process matters. Of course, the results ultimately matter. But just like in life, you could do all the right things, and then all of a sudden, you know, you save up all your money, you buy a car, and then you get sideswiped. I don't know how the world's going to unfold. All I know is if you do the right things and work towards the proper goals, eventually you will probably get there. But if you just go all in or do all the things that basically Dan Snyder did, you're going to face problems for reasons beyond maybe being, you know, setting a bad culture throughout your building. So I think in general, what they have accomplished so far has been pretty reasonable to me. As Nikki and I discussed here, that's not the same as saying it's going to work. And I've made the example many times before. I had somebody on Twitter comment when I mentioned a couple of college basketball recruits as an example of, I need to see it for myself before I'm going to question things. I mean, I remember when the extreme was like when Josh Dotson, who I remember liking coming out of Texas, coming out of TCU. And he was a guy that I remember mentioning as a first round target. And I think within 1 day of meeting him, I was like, oh no. You could just kind of tell he didn't have the passion, the fire that football players are going to need. And we'll see. When they get out on the practice field in a few weeks, not so much the rookie camp, but otherwise, you at least get a feel for whether or not you understand where the coaches are coming from. I thought Emmanuel Forbes looked pretty good last summer. And then obviously it didn't work out in real games. Was that usage? Was that the player? You know, it's a combination of all those things. But until I see it with my own eyes, I'm not going to get too crazy over the individuals. But as a process, as an overall grind that they've had here for these last 4 months, I think it's been generally pretty good and pretty solid. So, and I still came out of the way with the draft. Of course, there's things that they did. We're like, that's a little curious. I know a lot of people are harping on the offensive tackle spot. You know, as you know, I went through this exercise, you know, over the last month or so, and there was a when I did my first round mock draft for The Athletic, I had Washington trading back into the first round to number 30, I believe, at that point for Tyler Guyton. When I did my finals Commanders mock draft, I had them trading the other way. And my reasoning was, you know, without even getting into the cost so much, but just simply, if you've got all these young offensive tackles, if Washington thinks they can play right away, cool. But all the evaluations I was reading suggested that guys like Tyler Guyton needed more time. And if that's the case, then maybe he's not, maybe you don't need to force the issue when you're a team like Washington that has so many needs. I keep seeing people keep yelling at me today on Twitter that, look, the Vikings went from this, acquired that second first round pick, number 23, without giving up a first. And that's true. They also did it not during the draft. They did it earlier. They also are in a different time frame than Washington is. I know that they ended up with J.J. McCarthy, but like, that team is ready to go now, which is why for them that Kirk Cousins leaving was frustrating. But they've got a pretty good squad. They're thinking about the playoffs. I don't think realistically that Adam Peters spent much or any time this week going, we've got to make certain picks for the playoffs. They're thinking about the long haul, not next year, and trading away whatever picks it would have taken, two or three picks, to get a tackle who, again, you're going to have to tell me for sure you believe he's going to play this year. And again, even if he does, Would you feel very comfortable a rookie left tackle playing with Jaden Daniels? I wouldn't. I mean, but I don't know. Maybe they come in and are great. Look, and just to be clear, I understand I can't just keep saying, well, I don't know. I'm talking about, for me, the process of not overspending to do that makes sense. Whether the individual player ultimately works out, you know, my magic eight ball is not working right now. So that's how I generally see what they accomplished over the last few days. A couple other things I wanted to note. So the way the draft process works from the media perspective is that at the end of each day, some principal or principals from the organization come out to discuss whatever it is that's happened. So on both day one and day two, Adam Peters did those things at the Friday or Thursday and Friday night. Saturday, it was Lance Newmark, the assistant general manager. Adam Peters was whatever else he was doing, undrafted free agents or whatever. So what was interesting about that is a couple of things. One, no Dan Quinn. He did speak on Friday when Jaden Daniels had his introductory press conference earlier in the day, but he was not at the podium for any of those days. And what's interesting to me about that is I guess this is more for the people who didn't quite, like, I heard some people say before they made the quarterback pick, who's ultimately got final say? I mean, it seemed pretty obvious in real time, or at least it should have, that the answer to that question is Adam Peters. But that the fact that the head coach didn't even come out one time at the podium says all you need to know about the hierarchy for what's happening here. Okay. So that doesn't mean that, you know, this is not about, it's just a matter of what's the flow of the power here. And unlike the last time where Ron Rivera had all of it and Martin Mayhew would come out to these press conferences and he would say what he thinks as an evaluator, but Ron Rivera was in charge. In the past, you know, two decades, whether it was Mike Shanahan or Joe Gibbs or Marty Schottenheimer for a moment, whatever, like there has not been a full-fledged general manager here by himself in forever. I guess since Charlie Casserly, that is clear now. If for those who have not picked up the signs, it is Adam Peters. So I think that's notable because I do think that one, just it's interesting to see like a clear delineation between power. Again, the power shifts now in that in 2 weeks is rookie minicamp. And from that point on, I don't know when we're going to officially hear from Adam Peters again. It's Dan Quinn at that point determining what's going to happen on the field, how they're going to use certain players along, you know, along with his coordinators and other coaches and so on. I mean, not that Peters is going to go to Siberia or anything. But you know, I think there's a lot of respect that goes both ways. Peters, I think, recognizes, hey, Dan Quinn, this is his deal. And that's how that's going to go. But you know, it is, if for those who haven't figured it out yet, it's Adam Peters at the top, then it's Dan Quinn. Just because it's not been calibrated that way here in forever. I just thought it was interesting the way they were handling that throughout. Obviously, the Commanders also signed a bunch of undrafted free agents, notably Notre Dame quarterback Sam Hartman. Nikki and I talked about him and what that could mean for the QB room. I don't want to get overly worked up about these guys, but they did sign a bunch of undrafted free agents. A couple of them got some pretty good money. This cornerback from Colorado State, I'm going to butcher this name, Chigozie Anyasim. He got a $300,000 base salary plus 50K signing bonus. So when you know, again, he wasn't drafted, but when you see good money like that coming to an undrafted free agent, that's a good sign of a player to watch who could potentially make this team. A couple other undrafted free agents that stood out to me. One, USC running back Austin Jones. I need to learn kind of almost anything about the young man, but one thing I do know is that one of his offensive coaches last year at USC was, in fact, Cliff Kingsbury. That has to be either at a minimum good insight from Kingsbury if the scouting staff thought had some interest in him, or Kingsbury says, "Hey, let's get that guy. I like that guy. I can use him." So I think that's a name we'd have to keep an eye on when we get into the rookie camps and the mini camps and things like that. The Commanders didn't address or didn't add running back in the draft. They didn't need to. But, if they kept four, I don't know who the fourth one would be. So an interesting name here. Probably more practice squad than roster, but nonetheless, an interesting name there for sure. Again, Nikki and I will talk about the tackle, so I don't need to get into that. They addressed the wide receiver hole vacated by Curtis Martin by adding Luke McCaffrey, the Christian McCaffrey's younger brother, in the third round. I thought they would maybe do more at edge rusher. They picked up a kid from Notre Dame in the seventh round. The only you saw in my mock drafts, I had a guy like Marshawn Nealand mentioned a ton early in the draft. My mock drafts and their drafts are a good example as to the best player available approach. At some point, I have to pick somebody, right? You can't just keep going and saying, well, I don't know what they're going to do, so let me get paralyzed and do nothing. I did that exercise of six different mock drafts, including at least one where it was more like the best player available kind of a deal. And that's clearly where they went with Johnny Newton, the defensive tackle from Illinois, and then cornerback Mike Sandstrill from Michigan and tight end Ben Sinnott from Kansas State. Those were needs. They weren't the screaming needs of offensive tackle, and I would argue defensive end just in terms of talent. They have enough defensive ends now for what they did in free agency to have a credible rotation. But in terms of like the upside of one of the more important positions, I think that's still lacking. So I think that's something they're going to have to address in the off season. Just to go back on Johnny Newton, we did talk about it a bit, but we were in the media room and the second round was about to start. And I mentioned him a couple times because, Johnny Newton, Cooper DeJean, the defensive back from Iowa, and Kool-Aid McKinstry, the cornerback from Alabama, were the three guys that were in my first round mock draft that slipped out. So I had more attention on them. And I was like, look, the cornerbacks are more obvious, but I'm not ruling out Johnny Newton because of things like Fedarian Mathis hasn't done much so far in 2 years, that like Jonathan Allen has a $23 million cap hit going to 2025. Is there going to be a contract negotiation or the Commanders going to wait? And if they wait, then I would probably guess he doesn't come back. That's a long way to go before we get there. But that's why I didn't have a problem with Newton, because from a timeline perspective, it fits with where I believe they're headed, which is focusing on 2025. So it's things like that that make me really interested in the draft. What's the theory? I think if you're focusing more on the players, which is reasonable, they're the ones who actually are playing, right? That's about an individual scenario. And I just, again, even if for argument's sake, say that, Cooper DeJean goes on to have really good success with the Eagles, it doesn't mean he would have here. Same thing with Kool-Aid McKinstry, same with Roger Rosengarten or Patrick Paul, two tackles, offensive tackles that went before Washington was back on the board for Brandon Coleman. They kind of went around the point of where the 50 and 53rd picks were, where they went Sandstrill and Sinnott, and then where Coleman went at 67. A lot of the guys we've discussed went in that range. They may be better than them than Coleman. We'll see. Dane Brugler had Coleman and Rosengarten basically even. He only had Patrick Paul a few stops ahead, spots ahead. So, we'll see. I think Coleman for me, I don't know how much Nikki and I talked about this, but I think Coleman for me is really fascinating. Not only like it, part because they are viewing him as a tackle, where a lot of the other conversation pre-draft was about him being a guard. I had a executive from another team tell me today he really likes Coleman, but liked him more at guard, where he thinks he can be really special. He wasn't ruling out that he could play tackle. He just thinks that ultimately he would be better off at that spot. Would I have liked to see him draft a second offensive lineman? Sure. I think most of the drafts I did had that. In fact, several of the mock draft editions I did were having, like, say, a Roger Rosengarten in the second and then a Blake Fisher in the fourth or something along those lines. Or maybe it was like later in the third. Well, though, you're right, they didn't have a fourth. So it was like they're late. It was like they're later in the third. I think that could have been a reasonable way to go without a question. It's not what they did. And protecting Jaden Daniels is absolutely the biggest concern. The roster is too, and Rome wasn't built in a day, which is a line I used in my story that's going to go up Monday morning. So, you know, look, I don't give out grades on drafts, but from a philosophy perspective, a process perspective is where I get worked up. And I would just say for me, I thought their process has been pretty reasonable for these last 4 months. I think they'd have been in a much worse place if they had traded away future picks or signed some older-ish players to longer-term deals for a team that is not ready for prime time, as it were. So in general, I liked what they did process-wise. How the players turn out, time will tell. I think that some of their guys, like a Sandestrill, are also pretty good for, you know, the mindset change that they want to have happen here. I mean, when Nick Saban goes on the ESPN broadcast and says that pound for pound, Sandestrill might be the best player in the country, I don't know how to argue. I don't know how to look at that and think, well, this is crap. I get it. He's 5'9", you know, 180 something, soaking wet. So pound for pound may have very big difference. That's not, you know, the world isn't played on pound for pound, but just saying there's a lot to like there. Washington wasn't the only team that thought very highly of him. So I'm not going to sit here and crow and say they killed the draft, but I am going to say I really like their process throughout. They were consistent with it in free agency and the draft. And from that perspective, I give them I don't give a grade, but I give them a big kudos. Is that fair? all right. So couple other notes. So basically they're off now until about 10 days or so when they go back for rookie minicamp. The veterans will come in after that. Actually, just to lay it out here, rookie minicamp May 10th through the 12th. We're out there the first day on the 10th. OTA then starts May 14th. They've got they've got sessions that are going to run all the way through June 7th. We'll be out there for 3 days in that time period. Then veteran minicamp, June 11th to the 13th. That's when the mandatory participation kicks in. But according to everybody, you know, they were able to start their workout program earlier this year because of the new coach. All of their players showed up. I don't mean some, I mean all. You can insert your Chase Young joke here if you want, but they got really good participation. Josh Harris was very pleased, as was, of course, Dan Quinn and Adam Peters. So off to a good sign in that respect. And, you know, I think, you know, again, the arguments that we have online or with our friends typically are focusing on the player, but the mindset, the culture, all that stuff, that is a different deal that, you know, we will see in time how that works. You know, I remember not to pick on Jamin Davis, but when Ron Rivera picked him, he talked about how Jamin Davis came from his military background and how, you know, that was a big deal for him because of his own upbringing. Well, I mean, Jamin Davis had several off the field issues, right? So just because you say these things doesn't make it so, but at the same point, what's the execution, right? Just like anything else. And, you know, if Peters, by the way, the team captain thing is pretty fascinating. We wrote about this in a story on The Athletic, myself and our 49ers insider, Matt Barrows. We wrote this sort of guide to Adam Peters at the draft. Barrows brought the perspective of somebody that's covered him, and then I wrote it from the Commander's end. And one of the things he said was that Peters really likes these team captains. I believe 7 of the 9 picks were a team captain full-time or at least at some point in their careers, and a bunch of their undrafted free agents also team captains. So that's an example of where the team captain thing is about leadership. Clearly he values that, goes out of his way to get that. And we'll see if he's made the right choices. I don't know what else to say other than I like their process. We'll see about the draft. For the people who are grading, you know, you do what you got to do for your work or for your life or for your mental health or whatever it is. But like, I can't get too worked up over almost anything they did. It would have been great if they'd figured out a way to get a tackle, but in a real sense, whether a free agency or the draft, you tell me what they could have done without more, you know, damaging their future assets or anything else. I would like to know. There you go. All right. That is, by the way, and I will just say, because I was getting this discussion with people online, I mentioned before that the one way to guarantee to get an offensive tackle this year would have been to give up a first round pick. Sure. People's like, well, Minnesota moved into the first round with that one. Yes, but they gave up multiple second round picks. That's also very valuable. Just because it's not a first, it's pretty valuable for a team that, again, we don't know where they're going to finish next year and needs a lot of stuff. So I'm not going to dismiss a second round pick as nothing either, especially if, say, they do have a top 10 first round pick. We're talking about a pick in the top 40. So you can look at it however you want to do it. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm just here telling you here what I think. And what I just laid it all out. But, you know, you can think what I think. It's fine. All right. Let's get to it with Nikki. I should also mention Daryl Green, of course, inducted. Or no, sorry, Daryl Green having his jersey retired. That's going to happen sometime this year. I had the chance to talk with Daryl Green. I'll play that interview for you this week as well. All right, so let's get to it. My conversation with Nikki Diabala from the Washington Post about this draft and where things are with the Commanders here on the Standard Room Only podcast. All right, it's time to recap all things that happened with the Washington Commanders in the NFL draft. Here to do that, has not been back on the podcast since she had a really big moment in her life, and I don't mean the Commanders drafting Jaden Daniels. It is our pal Nikki Diabala with the Washington Post. New change in life. How are we doing? You got a lot going on. What do you want to share with us? How's it going?
It's good. I got a little man now. He's pretty great. He's down here.
Well, nobody's seen this but me, so I figured that's where he was.
Yeah. Says hello.
Hello.
Things have changed. Hopefully they've changed in Ashburn too for the better. I kind of like this draft class, I'm not gonna lie.
Do you regret going with a J name for the kid that is not Jaden?
I do not. I only regret it when you push my buttons and call him JJ. But other than that, I do not regret it at all. I'm kidding.
I'm not gonna do that anymore. So we're all good. But you know, we're dealing with JJ McCarthy. I mean, it just, you know, I like alliteration as clearly do you. So, well, yeah. Congrats to everybody over there. Congrats to everybody in Ashburn, because clearly they think they had a good draft. You just said so as well. We'll go through this sort of in a couple of category wise, but just give me the broad strokes. Why are you high on this draft?
I mean, first of all, they took Jaden Daniels. It didn't seem like a hard decision in my mind, but you know, I realize there's much more evaluation that they do than perhaps I do. I was a little concerned that maybe they would take a flyer on JJ McCarthy or Drake May. And I just think Jaden Daniels is, you know, was far and away the clear answer. And they thought so too. So I was pleased with that. I really like that DB from Michigan. I think he's an impressive player and could be really interesting in the backfield. I mean, especially considering, you know, all that he's done in just 2 years of playing defense. I mean, he's a former receiver who converted, and they have a lot of guys that have converted from other positions. You know, Luke McCaffrey, one of the McCaffrey brothers was a quarterback who played at Nebraska, got offers from Michigan and Ohio State at quarterback, switched to receiver, and is now in the NFL as a receiver, which I think is pretty impressive. I also want stock in their athletic genes of that family. I really like Johnny Newton. I know at first it would seem like, why are they taking another defensive tackle when they have two, you know, premium guys inside and John Allen and Daron Payne, but I really like Johnny Newton. I think he's a stud. I think he could, you know, can never have too many pass rushers inside or outside, and I think he's a good one.
So but before we go through this, all the picks, just to stay with it, with these categories that I've, you know, spent time curating, really. I just took them from my article from last night.
Got it.
I had Newton as the best value pick. Now, sure, that's what Adam Peters seemed to be saying too. And it, you know, he was being projected sort of that late first, early second. So it's not like he's like completely, it's completely crazy that he went in that range. But the fact that they took a defensive tackle, which you would have said, well, that's not really a need if you're talking purely for 2024. One, that's when I, you know, I've already been saying this, but it said to me officially that Adam Peters understands they're building beyond this year the way people want them to think they're doing. So he took the guy that was clearly he thought was their best player on the board, he said, and was being viewed as a first-round pick. And, yeah, I like that as well. I also like the fact that he's going to go by Johnny, it appears. They already had a defensive tackle. They had one defensive tackle who previously dropped an apostrophe in his actual name. Then they had another one who went from Fedarian to Phil. So do they ever pick a defensive tackle who doesn't change, have a different name?
Jonathan.
Well, it's not John. Since 2017.
Yeah. Correct.
In day one or day two, at least.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm intrigued to see. I don't know. You know, again, I don't know that he like fell out of the first, but at the same point,
right,
he was clearly one of the guys to get. So yeah, to get a borderline second first round pick at a position where every position was in need except for quarterback the moment they took Daniels. So I like that. Was that, would that say your best value pick, or would you see something else on the board?
Yeah, I could see that. I also think the Michigan DB, Mike Samardzija, could also be viewed as that. But yeah, I mean, to me, a high second is very close to a first. So I don't know that they necessarily got him, you know,
right,
lower than perhaps he would have gone anyway, you know, if he hadn't been dealing with the Jones fracture and had the full, you know, pre-draft process as normal. Just a guess. I don't, you know, this is just guessing here. But I do, I mean, yeah, I do think he is a value add for sure. In thinking about though, I mean, that position, and this is my primary knock on the draft. I like the draft class overall. I mean, there's obviously one missing piece, and I would have loved to have seen them get an offensive tackle either by going back into the first round. I know you have thoughts on that, or, you know, even early in the second, but I understand their reasoning there because there wasn't a standout offensive tackle by the start of the early second round.
All right, we'll get there. And yes, I'm not sure why you think I have thoughts on this topic, but I'll try to conjure up a couple. Just to go back to the start of this whole thing. So last night in the media room, I was 8 hours of boredom, as you know from how day threes go. It's really a grind in terms of just trying to stay focused when you're there. I was reading out loud my thoughts on these categories, and everybody was making fun of, as you know, but like what struck me is like almost every one of their picks, I couldn't really quibble with too much one way or the other in terms of like the value or the surprise. Like every single one hit a need because right. They have nothing but needs.
So many needs.
So yeah. And we can sure we can all quibble about the player. But I'm going to leave that up to Adam Peters and the Dane Bruglers of the world, but rather than me pretending that I have a real say on this guard or this tackle or this whatever. So that's why this, I think, is such a weird, it was such a weird list to do. Like, for example, the most surprising pick. Certainly, I could go with Johnny Newton, too, if I'm viewing it from a 2024 perspective. But again, 2025, I don't know. Is John Allen going to be here? We'll have to see. Most surprising pick. Any one of them stand out for you?
That any of them were terribly surprising. That's the thing, is like,
right,
maybe Luke McCaffrey as a third rounder, that's felt a little high to me, but you know, he's a McCaffrey, who knows, maybe he's really freaking good. I mean, I would trust Adam to see that more than myself, you know.
Well, and plus you could argue he's too close to the situation, nobody probably had more insight into that than the 49ers situation. So yeah, I mean, perhaps it seemed a little early, you know, as I'm sure it is with you, like, you know, Dane Brugler's is the beast guide, is, you know, becomes the Bible. That's the thing I look at the most. He had him lower, as I think most boards did. So yeah, 100 did seem a bit high. That said, they had not addressed their receiver situation really at all. He is a slot. I think I saw the stat. He had like 71% of his catches the last 2 years from the slot. He ran, I want to say it was the three cone drill. It was like the second fastest one in the last, since 2018 at the combine. So he clearly fits some needs and has a profile that would fit that need. So I did not have a think have an issue with that in theory, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's really the only one I could be like, maybe that seemed high. The others, I'm with you. I can't really argue against them. I mean, I trust their evaluations of these guys, and they like you said, they hit positions of need. I intrigued by Jordan McGee. I think he's hell of an athlete. I think that could be interesting in that position. I say all this knowing we said all this about draft classes the last 4 years. You know, it's just a matter of will they pan out. So I hate to. I'm always hesitant to go into these thinking, oh yeah, they really nailed it. We don't know. We don't know until we see them on the field. I like the types of guys they went after. A lot of these are captains and their football programs. I mean, a lot of them, you know, have proven leadership, have worked to really prove themselves. I mean, you look at Jaden Daniels, his year over year improvement. You look at Luke McCaffrey, even, you know, converting from quarterback to receiver, Sanders still converting from receiver to DB. I like that these guys have a record of improving and then kind of working, not from the bottom, but like working their way up to get where they are. I think that's an important trait to have, especially for rookies coming in.
Yeah, no, for sure. I went with, for that answer, I went with Ben Sinnott only because using Dane Brugler's guide, he was the sixth best tight end per Dane, and he went, I think, off the board as the second. He also had him as a fourth rounder. He went off in the second. But that said, I think Daniel Jeremiah had him as his number two with like a top 50 grade. So again, it just depends on who you look right at. They clearly needed a tight end. Adam Peters talked about how his certain traits reminded him of two guys he had in San Fran and George Kittle and Kyle Juszczyk. He made it very clear. I'm not comparing him to being George Kittle, but the point being, if Adam Peters sees their traits in him that for guys he used in San Francisco, then I'm good with, with him being the tight end, whether he was, you know, could they have waited? You know, I don't know. Depends whose board you look at. Right. So, and I've already had some people tell me they thought that was a good pick outside the building. So it's surprising, but again, as I said before, I don't know that anybody is like any of these things are like I can really scream about right. Per se. All right. The next category for you to dive into is biggest question mark. I think, you know, I went with the position you already kind of mentioned, tackle, but where would you go? And you can answer. I don't know. I don't even know to this minute if biggest question mark is.
I mean, yes, they have Cornelius Lucas. I know they've said publicly we think he could start. We've seen Cornelius Lucas for 40 years. He's a very good reserve, but I don't think you would consider him a full-time starter. Maybe he got significantly better over the offseason. Who knows? I think they need something there. And there was a lot of hope going in, like I said, that they would try to find their tackle for now in the future in this draft class because it was so deep. There was a lot of talent near the top. Didn't work out that way. So now it's Cornelius Lucas, maybe Brandon Coleman, and maybe see who comes on the waiver wire. Like,
yeah, I mean, look, they definitely. Like
that's something they tackle.
No pun intended, yeah.
Yeah. That they take on, maybe that's their premium position of next year. I don't.
Yeah,
fill that position.
Yeah, that would be my assumption. I mean, you know, putting aside Jaden Daniels, the specific human being that now everybody's invested in, like he's their child. Sure, tackle is one of the more important positions out there after quarterback, tackle, edge rusher, cornerback, etc. You can't fix all your problems in one draft or one offseason. The free agent market was not very good. The number one left tackle who changed the team this year was Tyron Smith. He's 33 years old. He's missed like the majority of his games the last 2 or 3 years. He's clearly going to want to go play for contender, not a team coming off a 4-win season. Yet everybody wants to keep telling me they screwed up by not either A, signing, like go sign, to have all this money, go spend on somebody. Okay, well, he was the number one rated guy. The Jets are so uncomfortable with that, that they went and spent a 10th pick in the draft on his, it's a long-term replacement, but also on his backup. Like, I don't know why people think that there was some tackle out there they could have gotten. And then in the draft, they tried to move into the first round. I guess they determined that the price was too high. Some of these guys are not going to play a lot this year or be in, not very dependable because they're rookies. I'm losing my mind over this. Yes, they understand they have to get a tackle, but the idea that, like, oh my God, this is malpractice is, I point to the situations they could have done. That would be my only argument to anybody. I'm not saying you. I just mean anybody who would be screaming at me. I need to know what you would have had them do otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing is like I can't really fault them. We've seen how, I mean, everybody knows how valuable that position is, and especially I feel like in Washington, we've seen how important it is. As they've cycled through quarterback after quarterback, and yet another young guy is coming in who has taken a number of hits in his college career already. You want this offense to work, and you want to, I mean, I don't, it's hard to see how it can if you don't have, you know, reliable protection on that side. Yeah, I can't really fault them given what was available to them on the veteran market. And what it would have cost them going in, because I mean, as we've mentioned, they had a ton of needs going into this offseason, maybe more than even they expected when they arrived in Ashburn. I think that's fair to say. You know, this, even going into last year, I thought this team was in a better place than clearly they were. I thought the secondary was in a better place. It was a mess. And now as they try to undo all this and repair it all, I mean, they're finding, you know, holes everywhere. So I don't totally fault them. And, you know, again, it can't be fixed overnight. And I do like sort of the way they went about plugging a lot of their biggest holes. I like that they really heavily invested in linebacker this season to try to plug up the middle of the field on defense, finally, after years. We'll see how it all pans out with those guys, but at least there's a record of a lot of these guys and how they've started and, you know, just what they've done over the years. I have more faith in, you know, what they're going to do on defense. I just rambled a ton. I'm sorry.
No, that was good. That was good insight. You know, like I said, for me, if people want to get themselves worked up because they've studied the draft and they have their own big board and the Commanders didn't follow, I mean, God bless. The only part, I'm not qualified to make those claims. If you are, good. I look forward to reading your website or seeing your beast draft guide. That said, the thing I do think we can discuss reasonably is the process. Note, this is not, no pun intended for Josh Harris, the process for which they make their choices. And again, I just, you know, they tried to move into the first round, but at some point, I told people on Twitter, the one way to guarantee they could have traded in was to give up next year's first round pick. And if they had done that, I would have screamed bloody murder, because we just saw the Carolina Panthers with a rookie quarterback completely implode and get the number one pick. I think it's reasonable to say right now, I would bet they have a top 10 pick next year, if I had to bet right now.
Do you think so? I think it's so hard to say.
Oh,
I really do feel like this is starting from scratch. I mean, this is going to look like a completely new team. Sure, there are going to be some holdover starters, but for the most part, this is a brand new team. Maybe it becomes the Texans. Maybe it becomes the Panthers. You know what I mean? And that, you know, how they look overnight.
I'm not saying I'm predicting that. I'm saying if you made me bet top 10 pick or no, I would have to take top 10 pick because, you know, I mean, it's a rookie quarterback for one. Automatically, you're going to be a little bit behind the playoff contenders most likely. And, you know, I've talked about this before, but CJ Stroud came into a better spot than I think people recognize because they had been building up their draft 3 years prior. This group, 2020, the whole class is gone. Jamin Davis, not first, his options not getting picked up. The other first round pick, or one of them, Emmanuel Forbes, clearly was coming off a bad year. So I don't know what they don't have a lot to build on. So anyway, my only point is I'm not trading away my next year's first round pick for anything.
I agree with that. That's
and
smart.
Therefore, at some point, what are you going to do? I mean, and again, they have a thousand needs. Yeah, and also I would say, sure, they could go out and sign. I'm making this up. DJ Humphries, Mekhi Becton, maybe they will. Tell me this, and I don't mean this to pick on the person. Who was the starting left? What rookie was the starting left tackle when Ryan Fitzpatrick got hurt? Oh, that's right. It was Charles Leno, not a rookie.
Correct.
Who was the starting left? Who was the rookie when Alex Smith got hurt or Joe Theismann got hurt or RG3 got hurt? Yeah, nobody. They were all veterans of some degree. So football's a rough sport. Things are going to happen. You plan the best you can, and they got to figure this out. But at the same point, people are acting like the world's all over if they don't do it. That's where I start to lose my mind. I did a mock draft where I had them trade into the first round for a tackle, but other teams did them too.
Yeah, I agree with you. I just think that, and I don't think the world is ending because of, they didn't get a tackle, but the
world is ending for other reasons, but that's a separate issue.
Yes, different podcast. But I don't think they have the depth that they did even 4 years ago. I mean, for as much praise that was heaped on that offensive line for their depth and, all these guys that played in sync, I mean, they decimated that group, and now there was no depth last year, and we don't really know what they have this year because of a lot of new guys have come in. So it's still a concern for me. And
absolutely.
It probably will be for a while, but I'm in agreement. I don't think there is much more they could have done there. This team will be rebuilding for more than 1 year. So I'm with you. It's smart to protect those first round picks. I'd like to believe, and maybe this is because I had a kid and I'm become soft. But I'd like to believe they're not going to have a top 10 pick next year. Maybe.
Wow. You definitely have become soft.
I don't know what's happening to me.
Look,
don't. If, maybe it's just I got like an actual night of sleep last night. Maybe that's it. I don't know. It's concerning though, isn't it? Should I see somebody?
Well, I mean, I just have to recalibrate my entire podcast when you come on if you're going to be optimistic. I tend to lean in thinking it's going to go a different way. So good. I'm glad. Look, I'm happy for you to be optimistic. And like I said, here's what's so funny about this also in general. I don't think they know what their plan is. The draft. Excuse me, just ended. I'm sure Cliff Kingsbury's already gone on the whiteboard and drawn up some plays specifically with Jane Daniels in mind. And I'm sure Dan Quinn and Joe Witt have thought about how they're going to deploy Johnny Newton and Sandra Still already. But at the same time, like, they're not going to really know exactly what they're doing until they get to a training camp. That's why they're going to go through mini camp and the rookie camp to exactly see what they have. So I don't think any of us can say for sure what is going to happen. But that's okay. All of their moves have suggested they are focused on 2025, not 2024. That's kind of where I'm saying I think top 10 pick is more realistic. But in any event, so we've already talked about remaining needs a bit, but let me ask specifically, we can skip tackle. Where are you at cornerback? Because, obviously they draft Forbes last year, who may be the number one player. I'm intrigued to see what this coaching staff can do with, because I think they were just didn't have enough on the coaching side last year for the secondary. They have Benjamin St. Juice. Last year he took a bit of a step back. They add Mike Davis, who's a solid vet, but not Kendall Fuller or anything. They draft this new kid, Sanders Still, who's going to be like the slot guy. I think for 2024 purposes, that seems reasonable, but longer term, or maybe, however you want to look at it, I think there's still, do you think there's enough there or longer term, or where are you at with that group?
I probably have more questions than I did before with that group. Because they praised Quan Martin quite a bit and then seemed to bring in a guy that will possibly just replace him. It felt like they were replacing a lot of picks from years past.
Yes.
Like, I didn't like that guy. We're just going to replace him. I don't know that they're doing that with Quan Martin. I still think there's a lot of talent. Quan is still a mystery in my mind, a heck of an athlete, but we don't really know what he is at the NFL level. But I also think that of so many guys that have been there even for years, like, I don't really know how they should best use Benjamin St. Juice. I mean, for 3 years, he's kind of had the same sort of issues, just being, too handsy. The penalties with him, I've just got a too much. But he's, again, a heck of an athlete, good size, good length. Surely they can find some way to, you know, really develop him and turn him into a really good corner because he's got all the tools there. Emmanuel Forbes, total mystery after last year. Could he be a good NFL corner? We don't know. It wasn't last year, that's for sure. Christian Holmes, he regressed too last year. We don't know how these guys are going to look in Dan Quinn's system, and we don't know how much the staff is capable of truly developing players. And if these players are capable of truly developing beyond where they're at now, it's, you know, goes both ways. So to me, the secondary is still a total mystery. And this includes after, you know, moving on from Cam Curl and bringing in Jeremy Chin. I mean, I have no idea how that group is going
to
look.
I think that to me, like if you said to me right now, make the, you know, starting 11. I mean, I could put names on the paper, but yeah. I don't know definitively. You know, how does Jeremy Chin fit in? I did ask Lance Newmark because he handled the day three press conference specifically about how does Sanderstrell affect Quan Martin, and we got the very non-answer on that, which is fine. But like, yeah, it is incredibly not confusing, but it's just the one big mystery almost across the board. Especially on defense, as to how it's all going to look. And that's also part because, again, it's a completely new staff.
Completely new. And to your point earlier, they may not know either. I think they want to see how a lot of these guys look once they get them on the field. I mean, they haven't had any football time with them on the field yet. So, you know, training camp OTAs are more important than ever in my mind. Just to kind of take inventory of what they have and how to best use them.
When I'm curious about this, I mean, I know a decent amount about your how your brain works, but in terms of when it comes to, say, evaluating something that is completely new, it's one thing to say Emmanuel Forbes comes in year four of the Ron Rivera era, and it's pretty clear to see how they intend to use him. It's another thing to say any of these guys are coming into a system we haven't seen at all. Therefore, how am I supposed to assess it? How long do you give generally anything that's new like this time to before you're willing to sort of say, okay, here's my real kind of my first real grade on it? Do you wait a week, a month, training camp, the season, going the next year? Like, what? How long do you generally give before you say, okay, I think I know where I'm at here?
Right. No, it's a good question. I mean, I feel like you need at least a full season. And even then, I don't think it's enough because after a full season, that's when you know what you have, but that's not necessarily when you start to see how it all look when the pieces come together. Especially here, I mean, there have been, I think back to like the Scott Turner era, like, you know, I agree with the decision to move on from him. It just was not working, but there were so many instances or so many, I felt like there were so many major long-term injuries on that team that you never really got a sense of how the offense could look if everybody was available. And I get it. Like every team sort of faces this, right? Like it's football. You're not going to have everybody available, but they were significant players enough that it felt like, all right, this is sort of their way of compensating for this guy's absence. So it's not necessarily how it would look, but my point is like, I don't think even after 1 year, you can truly get a look at how things will look. I think we'll have some pretty clear ideas. And I think by then, you know, what a player may or may not be, or at least what trajectory they're heading in. So I think by the end of the season, we should, you know, have a clear idea of where Forbes stands and, you know, if, you know, the stuff that happened in his rookie year was, you know,
right,
a year and we're moving on and he's developing and he can be, you know, more like a first round cornerback.
Right. This is kind of like dating, a topic I shouldn't discuss with any authority, but it's sort of like you meet somebody and you first start learning what they do, what they say, you listen to what they say, you try to figure it out. And then a month in, 2 months in, 3 months in, is it consistent? Are they continually to discuss things in a way that you think, okay, I'm still here, I like this? Or at some point they're like, well, you know, we can talk about drop. We can drop up, talk about building up the roster, then drop the quarterback later, or say we have to go spend a first round pick to get a quarterback, or like, Like, I need to know what where it's at. We don't know yet. Right now, it's the definition of the honeymoon period. I mean, Adam Peters and Dan Quinn have reputations, at least with Quinn. I mean, in a reasonable way. At least with Quinn, there is, if you want to go back and study everything he said with Atlanta, you can base it against that. But for me, I don't care what anybody says about anything until I get to see it for myself. This is with recruits coming into college to the teams I care about. This is with draft picks and even to a degree with the people that we discuss. So that to me is how this all sort of works. I need time to see, are they making moves based on reaction? Or are they making moves based on real theory? Right. So far, I think theory, but
yeah. And to me, that's the biggest challenge of a rebuild in the NFL or any pro sports is it's not the rebuild itself. It's not going out and finding the talent necessarily and finding the best ways to put it together. It's meeting the outside expectations because they seem to be greater and greater every year. There seems to be more urgency every year. I mean, we've talked about this before, even with like coaches. I remember when it seemed asinine to fire a coach after only two seasons. And now they don't even get a full season. And I say that not necessarily disagreeing with the decisions of each franchise that have done that, but that's kind of where we're at. And same for quarterbacks. You know, if young quarterbacks don't star immediately, they're labeled busts. If, you know, or, you know, kind of cast aside and traded. And, you know, that's the problem. If you don't immediately have a roster built to win, you know, it affects everybody on it. You know, if they don't win immediately with Jaden Daniels, what do you think the outside talk of Jaden Daniels is going to be, whether or not it's his fault or the fact that he doesn't have a left tackle and other pieces at this point? That's the challenge, is, you know, just meeting that expectation, because the urgency from the top down, and from outside, I think is greater than ever. You know, teams don't have the time, I feel like, that they did in years past.
And just to resurface a subject that you and I may have discussed on a podcast, people noticed, I think we're in agreement here. When it comes to Jaden Daniels, because he has started 53 games, I don't think there's much debate whether he's starting week one, barring the unforeseen. I mean, if it was a younger guy, I would question. But if he can't start week one, this guy specifically, then I think there's a question. So I'm assuming he'll be in there. Nobody would commit to that. Not Harris, not Quinn. Jaden Daniels said he was just focused on learning his teammates' names, you know, things like that.
Are you going to start Marcus Mariota over Jaden Daniels?
Not with 53 career starts. Yeah. No. That's not a thing. By the way, so speaking of the quarterback room, obviously always fascinating, even with the depth stuff. They signed Jeff Driscoll in the offseason. They still have Jake Fromm, but they now, in undrafted free agency, added Sam Hartman, the Notre Dame quarterback, gave him some decent money. Not going to say we need to predict, but like, you know, I think there's a reasonable chance he's QB3. Perfect world, he's probably the practice squad guy, but, you know, I mean, because like Jeff Driscoll is not a guy you'd be like, oh my God, we can play him. It's more like, well, at least he's played. So we'll have to see how that goes. But, certainly adds to the intrigue. It's not exactly drafting Cousins after RG3 or drafting Ferratt after Shuler. But it's interesting. Every time they draft a quarterback really high, they somehow end up with another one.
No, I know. They have five quarterbacks on. I mean, they said they wanted four going into camp. They have five. I mean, to me, the first one that falls off is Jake Fromm.
Sure.
Just my opinion. At least Jeff Driscoll has played at least a bit. Maybe Sam Hartman is practice squad. I don't know. I mean, we know one and two. To me, that's kind of all that matters.
No, for sure. It's just because it's fun. It's fun drama. And I will say, again, as somebody who keeps preaching 2025, none of the other quarterbacks will be here next year except for Jaden Daniels. Therefore, Sam Hartman could be QB2 next year should, you know, everything would evolve perfectly. So Jeff Driscoll started a game each of the last 2 years and 5 of the 6 years of his career. So he's at least played. Yeah. Fromm's been on the practice squad basically the last two. Okay. Well, other than that, if we say this is sort of the end, like Adam Peters got hired 1 week after the season ended. And now we're here at the end of April. I'm going to sort of say this is the end of at least chapter one.
Yes.
If we're going to look at it from that perspective, they'll start rookie minicamp in a couple weeks, whatever. Just like, just your vibe.
Well, is it the start or is it the end?
What?
Because they arrived like a week before training camp last year. What did they really, I mean, on the field, it was sort of status quo.
You're talking about Josh Harris?
Yeah.
Oh, look, the 4-13 record goes on Josh Harris's record, but I don't blame him for any of it because he got here at training camp. The roster was set. He was smart. I think he smartly waited. All the people who wanted him to fire Ron at various points, they probably don't get the number two pick overall if they do, you know? So it couldn't have worked that better. But I'm just saying, like, this quarter, that from the moment Adam Peters, they went looking for Adam Peters to now, do you feel better, worse, or what's your instincts about where this team is right now?
I mean, I feel a lot more confident with this group going in, for sure. I mean, you know, we haven't seen these guys on the field. So I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves, but I mean, honestly, I like the way they went about it this offseason. Felt like it wasn't just, you know, I felt like they weren't just winging it. They did have a plan for how they wanted to build up the team, and that gives me some confidence they have a plan on how they want to continue to build it up and what their vision is. So I like that. It gives me more confidence. He agrees.
No, Julian agrees. No. Julian's also saying, Ben, I know you like to talk for a while. That's not happening today, which is reasonable. Understood. Yeah. He's not the only one who says keep it shorter. At Nikki Jabala on Twitter, go read her in the Washington Post. I don't know if your Instagram is even open, but if you want to see a dog and baby pictures,
it's all you get on there. It's, you know, apologies in advance.
No, that's look, who's complaining about baby and dog pictures? Come on.
That's what I'm saying, right? The world needs more of it.
All right, go take care of that one. I'm going to keep talking about the new Commanders babies, and we will go from there. I'll see you in a couple weeks,
Thanks for having me.
Yep. All right, that is it for now. Thanks for Nikki for her time and the little man over there as well. Thanks to everyone for checking out the podcast, checking out my work on The Athletic. Like I said, if you hear this today and you still want to get in, there's a dollar deal on The Athletic, $1 a month for 12 months that you can take advantage of. Just click on one of my articles and you will be there. But that is it for now. Ben Standick signing off. Until next time. See ya.